This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. Good evening to everyone. It is a lovely Wednesday night, and we are about to go into Mercury retrograde next week. So please prepare your computers and psychology, your psyche, etc. It should be a very interesting week, no doubt about it. I think the U.S. is about to default on their debt status, and will be very interesting to see what song and dance is trotted out at that time, which is August 2nd. And I'm moving this weekend away from the coast, where I've lived for a year in a very, very small one-room place, just because I wanted to be close to nature for a year. And so I've done that, and I'm very happy to do that, although I'm very, very happy to get into a bigger place because I'm very, very cramped as it is here, other than what's outside my door, which is the gorgeous ocean on the California coast. So my psych sort of psych information told me that I could make it for a year here on the coast against all the other wishers that said, oh, no, you know, it's so dangerous because of tsunamis, et cetera. But, you know, I think that we're all good for the moment. I do think we're going to have some earthquakes coming up here, though, and many other things. But tonight we have Sandra Sabatini from the Pythagoras Conference, which is a conference that I'm involved in December 2011 from the 16th through the 18th. I'll be speaking there as well as many, many other really amazing speakers, people that you know from Project Camelot. Many of our witnesses are going to be there speaking, including Rich Dolan, and Sandra can tell us who else. You can also go to their website, which is Pythagoras.com, I believe, or PythagorasConference.com. Well, I'm going to let Sandra explain all that. But at any rate, she's come on for the first half hour just to sort of talk a little bit about what's going on with the conference. And she's a very interesting individual herself, and I am having her back, I guess, in about a month on my show, I think, can't remember when exactly, to just do sort of an interview with her live on the radio, just because she has a very interesting background. But Sandra, so you're here with me. I can hear you laughing.
Yes, Carrie, I'm here with you. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on your show tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, it's a pleasure, and I'm very happy. I'm sorry I couldn't make your meeting this evening.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, I was doing another radio show earlier today, this Peter Tong show, and couldn't get out of that. So I was talking away on the air, and letting people know about my own conference, which is the Awaken Aware 2011 coming up in September. Long before yours hits the charts, so to speak. So tell us about Pythagoras.
Well, Pythagoras Conference is a global event that's happening in Louisville, Kentucky on December 16th through the 18th. We are bringing together 26 of the world's top guest speakers in new physics, renewable energy, exopolitics, new science, archaeology, social science, bioeconomics, consciousness studies, astropaleology, metaphysics. That's just to start, Carrie. Coming together really for a common goal to create real change for the future of humanity.
Wonderful. Yes, it's very exciting, and it's going to be fun to have all those people in one place at one time.
Indeed. A lot of these people, first time for them to be able to lecture out in the public and bring forward a lot of technologies that have been kind of sequestered for the last 50 years. And a lot of people are going to be able to see some of this technology at the Pythagoras Conference. Some of the people, if you want me to go down the list, Carrie, of who all is going to be there and what they're going to be talking about,
Sure. You can list the other illustrious guests besides myself.
Exactly. Well, number one being Dr. David Lewis Anderson. He is an expert in time control technologies, a.k.a. time travel. Dr. Florine Montagneux, he's going to be revisiting lost sciences using the complexity paradigms. Dr. Brooks Agnew is going to be there discussing the physics of the soul and time travel. Dr. Edward Close is going to be there talking about new physics. And he's actually going to be presenting some work that him and Dr. Vernon Nepi have been working on about consciousness studies. They've actually come up with their own new paradigm, and they're going to be actually unveiling that at the conference itself. Of course, we got also Stephen Schwartz, who's an expert in remote viewing. He's going to be doing a lecture on opening to the infinite in consciousness studies. Of course, we got Alfred Weber, who's going to be there talking about exopolitics and intelligent civilizations within the multiverse. Then we're going to have Andrew D. Bishago. Everyone knows Andy from Project Pegasus. He's going to be there talking about quantum access technologies. We have Goa Lobal talking about creative consciousness, art, and sacred geometry. They're also going to be premiering the Midwest premiere of the documentary drama called Thrive. And this is a tremendous picture. Motion picture is going to be premiering at the Pythagoras Conference. That's right up the level of What the Bleep. Do you remember what that is, Carrie? What the Bleep?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that should be fascinating.
And also, we're going to have director Foster Gamble there. Heather Caton with the World Genesis Foundation is going to be there. Stephen Bassett, of course, yourself. Antoine Jigal, Richard Dolan, Laura Eisenhower, George Haas, Sonia Barrett, Gary Voss, Kim Carlsberg, James Maroney, Fritz Zimmerman, Gary Evans, and Madam X, who is an expert in esoteric archaeology. And for the first time, she's going to be there to blow the whistle on a lot of some ancient mysteries over there in Egypt. And she's going to be bringing that forward for all the people who are going to be attending this year's conference. We got a lot going on as far as music activities as well. Tone Dogs is going to be there. We got so much going on, and we invite everyone to go over to Carrie Cassidy's page at PythagorasConference.com and click on her speaker page. And actually, all the listeners tonight who actually click on that get $100 off ticket badge, you'll save $100 off the conference tonight by using Carrie's special coded ticket badge. So I invite you to come on over to PythagorasConference.com.
Well, that's a very impressive list you've got there, and very exciting. Let's see, Dr. Anderson is somebody of special fascination for me. As a time travel expert, I've been tracking him down for quite some time, actually trying to get an interview. So this will be my chance maybe to grab him and try to do a Project Camelot interview. Obviously, I'm going to be playing two roles at your conference, one as a speaker and the other as trying to grab interviews with some of these great people that are hard to come by because of the expense with travel and all of that. But it should be a very exciting event and a lot of fun as well. So interesting time, December. What's it like in Louisville, Kentucky in December?
Well, actually, it's beautiful. It's just a couple weeks before Christmas. The weather is really actually nice there, thanks to the climate situation that we're all going through right now. And you know how that is, Carrie. But, yeah, Louisville is actually beautiful. It's actually my home state, Louisville, Kentucky. It's centrally located right in the heart of the Midwest, close to all metropolitan arteries. I mean, we're not too far from Chicago, Indianapolis, you know, Memphis. So it's at a central place right there in the heart of America where an event like this should be.
Okay. Well, you know, it's a lot of fun because I've never, you know, a lot of people I don't think have been to Louisville unless, of course, you're from the Midwest, I guess. And it's not somewhere that we, you know, I would normally head for. But it will be a lot of fun to meet everyone there in this, in sort of an unusual place to gather. Very interesting. Are you having any speakers from overseas?
Absolutely. Gary Evans is coming in from London. We have Antoine Jigal, who's coming in from Paris. We have Dr. Florin Montaigne, who is from Romania. So we do have an international group of speakers that are going to be speaking at this event, and we also have a lot of people coming from around the world, including Singapore and Japan, that are attending this event.
That's great. Well, it should be. It definitely should be a lot of fun. It's nice to keep these things happening, these get-togethers, and yours is a particularly large one. And again, when you get this kind of sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, brain power all in one place, energy, whatever you want to call it, it can be very stimulating, both mentally, emotionally, psychically, to get that kind of amorphic field generated in one place. I know that when Awake and Aware happens and we have all these amazing speakers in one place, people just get high. You just get a natural high off of it.
Indeed, and that's one of the results of this conference is to develop a global think tank. And
cool.
We're actually working towards creating solutions for the future. The whole purpose of this conference is about humanity and the future and what we can do individually to create that new timeline for ourselves.
Lovely. Well, you know, I can't wait to be part of it myself, and encourage everyone listening to also get a ticket and come on down. And it should be really fascinating. I myself enjoy sitting in and listening to all the different speakers, and that goes for when they're speaking at other conferences or wherever. Rich Dolan is a good friend of mine, and I've seen him speak a number of times. It's great to see him every single time he speaks. It's just it's a joy, and very interesting to keep up with people, keeping tabs with where they're at with their research and so on.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have some of the brightest minds that are going to be here at this conference. And like you said, when you put all of these people together in one place, something beautiful is going to happen. And we invite everyone to come to this event there in Louisville, Kentucky. And you can also see it on Global Pay-Per-View. We'll also have that option as well. And we'll go ahead and put out another media release on that starting in September, Carrie.
Oh, fabulous. That's great. So you'll be live streaming that. That is very exciting. Now, could you give out the website again just for the listeners to make sure that they've got it? And then once again, I'll just reiterate here that projectcamelot.org on the front page, if you scroll down, you'll see two buttons. One is for a discount on my workshop, and the other is for the discount on the conference itself. And $100 off, as Sandra was saying. So if you just click the button, that would be great. And, you know, look forward to seeing you there.
Well, once again, Carrie, it was a pleasure to be on your radio show tonight, and we invite everyone to go to www.pythagorasconference.com and get your ticket today.
Lovely. Okay, Sandra, before I let you go, is there any last-minute sort of updates just in terms of your world over there? I know you had experienced a tornado?
Yeah, it was actually a class 4 tornado that hit here in Springfield, Massachusetts. And what was really interesting is that they have never had a record of a tornado like that ever happening here in Massachusetts, ever.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So are you recovered from that at all at this point, or are you still inundated with repairs and all of that?
Well, I am doing a lot better compared to the 300 families that were displaced during that natural disaster. The place here after the storm literally looked like a war zone. Buildings were leveled, and I was very fortunate that my building was intact and that I'm still here. And I think about all those families that are still homeless and are still looking for resources. And if anyone has it in their heart to make a donation here in Springfield, Massachusetts, I ask you to go over to the city of Springfield, which has a .org website, and get a little bit more information about the fine people here in Springfield, Massachusetts, because they could really use your help.
Wow, that's amazing, you know, because you don't hear much about it, of course, in the news. There's lots of things going on around the world, and people are being displaced, actually, worldwide by various events that are coming and have been happening. That is part of and parcel of what we're going into. Had you had any, you know, sort of psychic premonitions of any kind prior to the event?
To be honest with you, Carrie, I've seen quite a bit of natural disaster, as you may know. And, yeah, you could say that I had quite a good solid feeling that something like this would be happening here on the East Coast. Nothing like this that I thought would be so close to home, as you would say. But it seemed that this storm had a consciousness about it, and I've been very vocal by saying that I don't think that it was just a fluke.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I have actually heard the base, you know, the idea that weather at this time there is no natural weather, and which is really a fascinating concept if you think about it, that they have messed with the weather so much, so many different countries getting their hands in to that situation, that what we have are constant sort of weather wars and trying to fix things that they've broken, so to speak. They put a patch in one place and it basically affects another place. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Sandra. We're going to go to a short break and be back with Clifford Harnacom, talking about chemtrails and things of that nature. Sandra, it's been a joy. Please say your website one last time.
That is www.pythagorasconference.com. Thank you so much, Carrie. Bye-bye. Okay.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Most Americans know the significance of July 4th, 1776. However, few know the importance of September 17th, 1787, the day the Constitution was written and adopted by our founders. Unfortunately, over 200 years later, this sacred document is under attack, along with our beloved Republic. Throughout the span of history, brave men and women have rallied behind banners, which have served as symbols of liberty against the forces of tyranny. Today, we have the Constitution Pride flag to show our support for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, freedom, liberty, and justice for we the people of the United States. Now available at www.1787flags.com. Get your very own Constitution Pride flag today and receive a free pocket Constitution with your order. www.1787flags.com, the official website of the Constitution Pride flag. That's www.1787flags.com.
Feeling stressed, tired, lacking energy, or lacking libido? Now you can take control of your healthcare goals in the privacy of your own home with the use of reliable, high-quality health products from Ideal Health in New Zealand. Conveniently delivered to your door anywhere in the world. You'll find our friendly health team offer well-researched health information plus the highest quality health products. We want to ensure you not only get the best value products available, but also ensure you get the fastest therapeutic results. With over 2,600 pages of health information and natural products, all compiled by our friendly naturopathic team. To take advantage of very special rates, click on the banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And don't forget our convenient delivery service, Ideal Health New Zealand, leaders in alternative health. That's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Ideal Health New Zealand button. Proudly brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Why buy long-term storage and emergency preparedness dried and dehydrated foods? Well, freeze-dried and dehydrated foods can be stored just about any place and will be ready when you need it, like in the event of a disaster that disrupts transportation. Grocery stores would be empty within 3 days. Bulk food purchases really make your dollars count. Buying in bulk, your cost per pound drops significantly. And it has 7 to 30 years long-term shelf life. No refrigeration is required either, so if the power goes out, your food is still safe. And you know, studies have shown that dehydrated foods are actually substantially more nutritious than either frozen or canned foods. The loss is only 3 to 5% of the original nutritional value of the food, without added chemicals or additives, making this method of food preservation by far the best choice for natural, healthy eating. So log on to emergencypreparednessdirect.com.
Warning. Warning. American. Warning. American Freedom Radio is habit forming. American Freedom Radio is habit forming. Use the truth carefully.
Truth Brigade Radio, live Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m., only on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The truth has just gotten hotter.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say that joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
Okay, this is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we are very pleased to have on with us Clifford Carnicom. And Clifford, are you there?
I am, Carrie. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Lovely to talk to you. It's very exciting because I don't know how familiar you are with Project Camelot, but we have people that have been writing to us for years trying to get me to get you on my radio show.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it very much.
Yes, and it's been quite the effort, and I do appreciate you coming on with me here. You are really considered one of the absolute experts on chemtrails, and I want to thank you right here and now for your dedication to humanity in doing the work that you do, and to your team, which I know you have quite a team there working with you, and thank you to all of them as well.
Well, I thank you very much, too. You know, we all play our part, and you're playing your part as well, and we all just do what we know is right. At least we try to, and do the best we can, and I'm just one small part of that picture.
Okay. Well, along those lines, if you don't mind, I would prefer that you kind of introduce yourself, give a bit of your background and how you got into this whole field, and maybe even describe a bit of your team. Just to start off this bit of an interview with you.
Sure, Carrie. You know, my background, first of all, I regard myself as an independent researcher. I have no affiliation with any organization other than the nonprofit that I've created myself. And my background is basically strong in technical sciences, I suppose. Spent a lot of time in the educational system. And pretty strong background in the technical field. I worked for the federal government for 15 years in three different agencies. I started out with the Forest Service, worked with the Department of Defense for 8 years, and then also the Bureau of Land Management. The field of work I was involved with the Defense Department was in a field of geophysics, specifically a field called geodesy. Which is a geophysical science basically related to gravity study and satellite study. And basically, if you think of surveying on a global scale, that's at least somewhat of a picture of the field of study. And spent about 10 years in the educational system in my life through an engineering department of surveying and photogrammetry for my undergraduate degree, and then I did graduate work with the Department of Defense at Ohio State University. So, you know, that's a little bit of the formal business. But, you know, I do regard myself as basically a citizen. I don't regard myself in any special or unique position other than I do feel an obligation and a duty to apply my background and my skills to at least some of the problems that face us. And unfortunately, these problems exist on a global scale now. We're not talking about trivial issues. We're talking about the very welfare and life of the planet and our health and all beings and creatures that dwell upon it, basically. And that's not an exaggeration by any means. There are many ways by which our welfare and the welfare of the planet are being assaulted and infringed upon. And this is one aspect of it. It's very important, certainly not the whole picture, but it's one that I have devoted my attention and resources to. Basically, I would say out of moral obligation to my own existence on this planet. I think that's a fair statement. In terms of the nonprofit that's been created, it's under the name of the Carnegie Institute, about 2.5 years old. It's a very small group at this point. No way around that. And we do seek to grow, but it also has to grow under the stringent conditions of the research and caliber of the research that is that the organization is to be known for. And so we invite people that are interested in participating in that process. I have continually put out an appeal for the professional community to engage themselves. There are difficulties, we understand, when we're dealing with issues that are very complex and controversial. It's difficult for the professional community to engage themselves many times because there are certain strings upon them in many ways. But nevertheless, there is a continuous invitation to that community, to participate in the work that needs to be done. So hopefully that's at least some introduction to some of the background, and then we'll go from there if you'd like.
Sure. Can you talk a little bit about the team you're working with? Because I know that you have a wonderful team over there.
Sure. It's a small team, to tell you the truth. There's been some reorganizational changes over the last couple of years, I would say, in fairness, because of the standards that are going to be required to participate. But there's about a half a dozen folks involved with the nonprofit organization right now. The main effort that is taking place right now, I can't announce any kind of formal date, but the main project that's taking place with us right now is we are trying to hold a conference in the Santa Fe area. Tentative plans are for the beginning of September, right now within the first 2 weeks of September, in Santa Fe. And the purpose of that conference will be for the Institute to basically present for the first time the chronicle of the research. We basically are talking about 12 to 13 years of research. For the first time, I was one of the members gave me a tabulated list of the papers that have been written. I actually had never seen this before, but there's a couple hundred articles that have been and papers that have been written over the last 12 years. And so it actually will be quite a challenge, but we're attempting for the first time to present an overview of the entire research that's taken place over the last dozen years under my name and now through the auspices of the Institute, a chronicle of that research. So it will be very much a scientific-based conference, I would say, but hopefully also with some serious audience participation, and particularly the medical community. It's necessary, whether we like it or not, it's necessary that we become engaged with certain very important problems that are facing us, certainly from a health standpoint. So that'll be the purpose of the conference. It'll be planned to be 2 days long and a bit intense, I would say, in terms of the amount of information and the type of information that needs to be covered. And when that date is announced or as plans are finalized, we'll go ahead and announce that on the site.
That's very exciting to hear. I know a lot of people will be very, very interested. There is a real fascination on what's being done. Of course, many different points of view as to what's going on in our skies. And I'd love to talk about that and sort of start to drill down in that direction. As you can appreciate, how many years now would you say you've been involved in investigating the chemtrails?
Well, the work, you know, it's going back. It's the beginning of 1999 is when this started.
Wow.
You know, in terms of the research. When people ask for a date, you know, that's when my work started. Actually, February 14th, Valentine's Day in 1999, was the day I put up my first photograph on a website, basically saying, you know, what gives here? There's something that doesn't look right. And that was done, again, out of moral obligation. I mean, it was apparent and obvious to me that something was not right. And really, if you just look at that early stage of the work, it was simply a call to attention. It was the first 2 to 3 years of work, at least the first two, were devoted almost exclusively to just pure image taking and photography and documentation, and just saying, this is what I'm seeing. I have an obligation to make this known, that it appears to me that something is askew here. And that's how it started. But, you know, that date, you know, it's not as though on a single day these events we're speaking of. And what we're speaking of is the alteration of our physical environment and in an intentional and systematic and deliberate way on a global scale to alter our environment, specifically to start with. It goes deeper than that eventually, but specifically to start with, to modify the atmosphere. I don't personally use the word chemtrails. I know it's popular, and that's fine. I don't have any problem with those that use it. But in my work, I attempt to be as accurate as I can in terms of language, so my terms are not as sexy or dramatic, but it's just what's accurate to me. And then terms which adequately describe what we're speaking of involve use of terms like aerosols and geoengineering. Geoengineering is actually a very accurate phrase. It's the intentional alteration of this earth. And that's how things started, I suppose, is to call that attention. But if you actually look back at the framework upon which these type of events occur, they go back prior to that. There is good reason to believe the programs were in operation up in the northwest part of the U.S. back as far as 93. And then if you look at the historical records, and I have a document by my side, which it really shows us a history going back to the days that it was possible. And the days that it became possible were at the close of World War II. As soon as you had high-flying aircraft, you will start to see the introduction of certain programs or projects and or biological research projects involving the use of aerosols. And an aerosol, by the way, it's a particle in suspension is what it is. It's a very small particle in suspension, and that material or medium can either be a gas or it can be a liquid. And if you look back at the literature, you will see aerosol projects being initiated shortly after the close of World War II. And human beings are like that in general, basically. If we can do something, we will. And not only that, if we can imagine something, eventually it shall come to pass. But if we can do something to basically attempt to control or modify our environment, human beings are very good at that. And that started back in certainly the 1950s it started. And there's been a continuum, but unfortunately it appears as though these intentions and operations and level of deployment radically extended themselves and escalated at the beginning of the 1999 era. So we now are dealing with global projects, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, and, you know, I have many, many questions for you, obviously. Can you describe maybe what you think? I mean, is there any sort of across the board one sort of composition of what is out there at the moment being sprayed worldwide and or just over the United States, or does it vary with every area?
First of all, in terms of the level that I'm dealing with, I'm looking at things pretty much from a global perspective. because this is how I see it. There's a few reasons for that. Number one, I am just a citizen. I don't have access to the entire world. I'm like everybody else here in a lot of ways. I do the best I can. But in terms of what I can do as a citizen, I can analyze, observe, and sample, and do whatever I can in the regions or locations I have access to, which at best is, portions of the western United States primarily. But even that, primarily in my local area. We have access to information through the net, of course. But really, in terms of geophysics, it's a global problem, and here's the reason why. There are many people that over the years, they would write and they say, well, where can I go to escape this, okay? And I have a problem, generally, with that type of request, because it denies the very nature of the problem, and that is, When you introduce something into what's called a fluid environment, and the atmosphere is a fluid as far as physics and dynamics go, it's basically a 3D medium in continuous dynamic motion. Whether it's a liquid or a gas doesn't really matter a whole lot. And I use this analogy quite a bit, but if you were to put a single drop of food dye in a full bathtub of water, okay, the question is what happens to that food dye over time? And what happens is it distributes itself and it seeks equilibrium. And this is exactly what happens with the atmosphere. And when I first started this study, it was a serious question to me. Is it actually possible that the entire atmosphere of this planet could be impacted by human beings and their devices? Do we have that kind of power and extent? And I studied that problem. And the answer from my perspective is absolutely we do. Now, I didn't know that to begin with, but in the process, I have learned that our atmosphere is much more fragile than I think most of us have any conception of. The atmosphere is a very thin layer around this planet. Three-quarters of the mass of the atmosphere is in a shell 7 miles thick. 7 miles thick is your trip down to the grocery store. Three-quarters of the mass of our atmosphere is contained within that layer. It's literally an eggshell that protects this planet. Everything about us, our whole existence, is dependent upon this shell. And if you want to ask whether or not it's possible that human beings could affect that shell in a global sense, the answer is yes, they can, and they have. And therefore, there is no area of the planet that, to me, is immune or isolated from the consequences of what has occurred. Because when you inject a sufficient concentration of particulate matter into the atmosphere, it will eventually seek that equilibrium, and in fact it has done so. And my contention and position is, based on quite a bit of work, is that our planet has been altered.
Okay, thank you. We're coming right back.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models: a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Blue Shield banner. Blue Shield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Following a radiological or nuclear event, radioactive iodine may be released into the air and then be breathed into the lungs. Radioactive iodine may also contaminate the local food supply and get into the body through food or through drink. When radioactive materials get into the body through breathing, eating or drinking, the thyroid gland quickly absorbs the chemical. Radioactive iodine absorbed by the thyroid can then injure the gland. But you can protect yourself with use potassium iodide, which acts to block radioactive iodine from being taken into the thyroid gland and can help protect this gland from injury. To take advantage of very special rates, click on the banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And don't forget our convenient delivery service, Ideal Health New Zealand, leaders in alternative health. That's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Ideal Health New Zealand button. Proudly brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Live worldwide weekdays 5 till 7 Central. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio.
City Project Hemlock, Whistleblower Radio, and we are talking to Clifford Carnicom about chemtrails. And Clifford, you were a bit cut off at the very end right there. Do you want to repeat the last line of what you were saying? Because I think it was important.
Well, yes, thank you, Carrie. You know, if I can recall there, you know, basically I was making the point that if there is any question about whether it's possible for human beings to impact the entire atmosphere of this planet, the answer from my perspective, everybody can do their own work, but from my work, it says positively, yes, that we can and that we have. The atmosphere of this planet, and this is as a minimum, okay? There are other consequences, but as a starting point or as a minimum, the atmosphere of this planet has been altered. Now, you ask another question, and you asked about, you know, what are the materials, and we talked a little bit about the scope, and the scope is global, but it's another important question, at least to start with, and that is, what's the nature of the materials that we're talking about? If you say it's been altered, you know, how has it been altered? Now, the work, again, from my perspective, says that there are three main classes of physical materials. that have been introduced into the atmosphere in a systematic way. And the three classes of materials would be that of metals. We'll talk about each of these just a little bit more if you'd like. But the first class of materials would be those of metals. The second class of materials would be that of a filament, a very unusual filament structure. And then the third class or category of materials would be that of biologicals or biological components. Now, these three topics are a discussion in themselves, but if you're willing, I'll expand upon each of them for at least a couple of minutes to elaborate upon the nature of these. And from there, we can at least start to raise more questions about, you know, what would be the impact of such materials in our environment and our atmosphere. The first class of materials would be that of metals. Now, actually metallic salt. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, everything that we're speaking of here is extremely small. Everything is at the microscopic stage. Okay, so we're not talking about things you can see directly with your eye, although you can see the congregate effect of aerosols in the sky. As a matter of fact, the opening example would be, you know, the Blue Ridge Mountains. I've actually never been there since I was a little kid, but in the Blue Ridge Mountains, it's known for the smoky haze, right, or the blue haze over the Appalachian Mountains. Well, that's due to a particular class of very small materials in the atmosphere on the size nature of what we're speaking that gives a little haze, even though it's not fog to it. So that's the type of thing we're talking about, extremely fine materials in terms of a sense of scale of size. A human hair is on the order of 60 to 100 microns. It's the most suitable unit here of measurement would be a micron. A human hair is roughly in the order of 60 to 100 microns in size. As we talk about these filaments a little bit more, fibers, we'll see why this is not a trivial affair, what we're speaking of. Asbestos fibers are on the order of 2 microns in thickness. And the material that I'm speaking of, metallic salts, would be about, the best estimate I have is about 4/10 of a micron, somewhere in there, half of a micron. So we're talking about submicron material. A normal microscope can see things up to about 2 microns. So we're at that point where it's already normally inaccessible to us in the main to actually physically just see the materials directly. But we can study them again, like I say, in a congregate sense or through chemical studies and this type of thing. We can at least make some assessments about what we're dealing with. The conclusion that I have reached is that one of these classes of materials is that of a metallic salt, okay, and in particular, I'll say a phrase here, and then we'll go ahead and explain it. The phrase is ionizable metallic salt. That's a technical phrase. Now, what does that mean? First of all, many things are metallic salts, okay? Sodium chloride, the salt you put on your food, is a metallic salt. So metallic salts are a common phenomenon in nature, okay? Now, it's not so common in the atmosphere, but nevertheless a common physical substance. But certain metals or certain metallic salts are more toxic or more reactive than other salts. So every metallic salt is not the same, and so you'd have to get into chemistry and start to study. What are the differences that you're speaking of? Well, one of the properties of the classes of material I'm talking about is with the attribute of what I call ionizable. And it's rather fascinating to me. You know, when I get in this work, I actually don't know what I'm headed towards. I don't know where it leads, and I do, to the best of my intentions, do not set any prejudgments as to where I'm going, and I end up having to learn as I go along. Quite a struggle, actually, in terms of the time and effort that it takes to get to certain points of knowledge. But there is a class of metallic salts that are they're rather fascinating in the sense that if you subject them to energy, they can become electrically charged. That's what an ion is an electrically charged particle. There are metallic salts in this world, a certain class of them in the periodic table, like barium salts, magnesium salts, these type of salts, particularly barium, those are prime candidates. These types of salts, if you subject them to energy, and the question is, where do you get the energy? Or what energy are you talking about? And the fascinating thing on these is that ultraviolet light provides sufficient energy for this class of metallic salt to become ionized. So now you ask, where do you get ultraviolet light? And the answer to that is the sun. And it's a rather fascinating prospect, but this class of materials, in an ambient sense, basically, if they're introduced into the environment, namely the atmosphere, and they are subjected to sufficient energy, namely that which is inherent in sunlight, it is sufficient to electrically charge this type of material. And this leads to all types of considerations and in terms of applications, because now you are involved in electromagnetics. You're not even just talking about the physical side. And we could just talk about the physical side. We could talk about the sheer ingestion, okay? The ingestion of microscopic particulate matter is damaging to our health. That's a straightforward fact. The American Medical Association will have your reports. You can look up on my work where I've documented Johns Hopkins University. It's a simple fact that if we breathe additional or increased levels of particulate matter, sufficiently small, which is what I'm speaking of, it is damaging to our health, and more bluntly put, it does increase mortality levels. Now, that is on the sheer physical level of ingestion of materials. When you now start to add on to that, what might be the nature of these materials? Are some of them more toxic than something else, besides the fact that you're breathing it? And then we add on the electromagnetic component to this. We literally open up a whole avenue of discussion which goes far beyond what somebody might regard as an annoyance, which I don't. I consider it much more serious than that, but the annoyance of so-called pollution. And one of my points from the very beginning is that if you don't want to get involved with the more complex issues that are inherent here, then all right, don't do that, but you have absolutely no excuse for avoiding this issue from the simple, plain standpoint of pollution alone. It is not an okay thing, and this is why there were certain laws created in this country. It is not okay to pollute the atmosphere, and this pollution is measurable, and you can measure. You can start with visibility. Look at the deterioration in visibility and start asking why. Clean air should be able to see about 100 miles to 120 miles. Go to the most remote parts of the country and ask how many times are you able to see, 100 to 120 miles, and ask yourself how many times are you able to see 10, 20 miles instead, and start asking why. And the answer is there's something in the way. There's something obscuring the sky, and it is particulate matter. And then you can go to work trying to trace down what you think the source of it is and where it comes from, but the fact is it's there. An electromagnetic aspect is something, depending on our time, we can at least branch into it. But that is another whole ball game when you start.
Okay. I personally have a specific interest in that side of things. And I appreciate that many people listening will have maybe more interest in the physical effects of these things on the human body. But I believe that to some degree has been covered and documented in other places and certainly on your site, and the research has gotten out there. I think perhaps the electromagnetic side of things is less known.
Well, it's certainly an interesting aspect, and we can talk about that for a few minutes. And I'll mention, before we finish, to make sure we mention some more comments on these other classes of materials, because they are equally important in terms of their impact upon us. And that being the filament structures that have been observed and recorded repeatedly, as well as the biological, which is...
Well, I mean, to go down that road at the moment, briefly, could you... Because I think we're also going in the direction of talking about Morgellons disease. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. We will be led there at some point, whether we like it or not, if we have sufficient time.
Okay, we'll be right back at the top of the hour with Clifford Carnicom.
Thank you.
Why buy long-term storage and emergency preparedness dried and dehydrated foods? Well, freeze-dried and dehydrated foods can be stored just about any place and will be ready when you need it, like in the event of a disaster that disrupts transportation. Grocery stores would be empty within 3 days. Bulk food purchases really make your dollars count. Buying in bulk, your cost per pound drops significantly. And it has 7 to 30 years long-term shelf life. No refrigeration is required either, so if the power goes out, your food is still safe. And you know, studies have shown that dehydrated foods are actually substantially more nutritious than either frozen or canned foods. The loss is only 3 to 5% of the original nutritional value of the food, without added chemicals or additives, making this method of food preservation by far the best choice for natural, healthy eating. So log on to emergencypreparednessdirect.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserves the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know that we are tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. We're talking to Clifford Carnicom. Clifford, right before the break, you were talking about, we had just broached the subject of the filaments, I guess you call them, and the possibility that that was associated with the Morgellons, and that that might lead in that direction. Do you want to briefly cover what you called the filaments, and then I think you said biologicals as well, so that we can make sure we have all of that at least touched on?
Yeah, we can go through it briefly, and then I'll come back to your subject of electromagnetics or so, and then we can come back through these. You know, it's all a loop in the end, so
okay.
It doesn't matter. At some point, you'll cross threads. So, sure, I'll go ahead and briefly give a description of the other two classes of materials. So there being three in total, first being ionizable metallic salts, and we'll talk about that again a little bit more about what it implies. The second one being filaments or fibers, and the third one being the biologicals. The second class of materials, I know of no other way of describing it other than a filament. Now, and we're speaking specifically of unidentified airborne filaments. This would be the subject. Now, we already spoke about asbestos fibers and gave a sense of scale of those, and those things are roughly a couple of microns in diameter. Now, many of us are familiar with the environmental attention that has been given to the presence of asbestos fibers in our environment and the huge crusade that took place, you know, through the 70s or 80s to eliminate and reduce that hazard in our environment. And that's because it's not a good idea to be breathing any kind of non-soluble filament into your lungs. And so we had that action taken, and our world has been the better for it as far as that goes. Now, the question that would arise, at least to me has arisen, is that if you were to detect repeatedly, and I'll say that in general, almost everything I work with is not an isolated instance. I usually just do not attach too much attention to something unless I can see a pattern or see something repeated. So I don't spend my time with isolated events as often because I look for patterns. And there is a pattern, and it started right back in 1999, shortly after, of the reporting of airborne filaments, and they were picked up on the ground. Okay, they were seen in the air and picked up on the ground. You know, the chain of basically of custody and source to tie it back to an airplane, you know, we can have that discussion. I understand that I cannot, garner a sample explicitly from an aircraft. So, you know, I've never made that claim anywhere on my site if you see it. I base the studies on what I can see and what I can sample. But you can work the chain through and determine where you think the source of them comes from. But the question is, if you have an airborne filament that if you put under the microscope, eventually you'll find this thing measuring at the submicron level, not even the 2-micron level, and you start running tests for solubility and this type of thing, and you find it's not going to dissolve, and you have no idea what this is, it should start raising some questions about what is this thing. And that's exactly what happened. And that started early in 1999. And there is an issue that I've been harping on for 12 years, and it won't go away until it's resolved. And I believe it has to be resolved at a legal issue when we finally get somebody with enough courage to come forward and take on the issue as it needs to be. But this involves the Environmental Protection Agency. And the record is quite clear in terms of what occurred. And that is, you had the reports of these unusual filaments from varied locations across the country occurring. I was sent at least two, if not three of those samples back then. And I looked at them, and they certainly, to me, they were sufficiently unusual that they required identification from a public health standpoint. And so a representative sample of this material that we're speaking of was sent to the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Her name was Carol Browner at that time, I believe, sent by certified mail with a polite, I think, but assertive letter requesting identification of the material on behalf of the public welfare. And the response from that letter was essentially no response. The EPA did not acknowledge, the part that I found most curious was they did not acknowledge the receipt of the physical material. It was physical material sent by certified mail, and the correspondence that they did get back, and they did reply, okay, with the letter. But the letter made no reference to receipt of the physical material. And the letter was basically a dismissal, and their choice phrase was that we are not aware. Their phrase was, we are not aware of any aerosol operations occurring, and did not acknowledge the material. That state of affairs existed for 1.5 years. There was some intervening correspondence with no further progress. After 1.5 years of time, you had a Freedom of Information Act filed by a third party, and at that time, the EPA immediately mailed the material, physical material, back to me, okay, after a year and a half hiatus, and declared that it was not their policy to identify or test any unsolicited material. Now, that particular phrase has just always been fascinating to me from a legal standpoint, because I was never interested in policy. That letter was not a request for somebody's opinion about what they thought was right and wrong. What it was a request for identification. And I don't believe, from a legal standpoint, it is justified to respond with basically the personality and whim and preference of the person in charge at that time to a, what I would call, a fair and justifiable request. And it has been a problem then, and it remains a problem to me now. The other phrase that certainly catches my attention in their response was the use of the word unsolicited. It's a fascinating word to use, because if you say that you're not going to do something unless we solicit for it, it means that they feel, they being the EPA, feels they have no responsibility to conduct anything on behalf of the public welfare unless they ask for it, unless they initiate it and they ask for it. And I personally think it's a questionable, at best, if not improper and inappropriate legal response at some point, again, if it ever reaches that level. It's always been a problem because we're now 12 years later. And, in fact, you will find a recent paper of mine. And, you know, what was it called? The title of that paper is called The Breath of a Decade. And it's actually 12 years, but it was shortened to The Breath of a Decade was the title of that paper, probably about 6 months ago, I would guess, something like that. And that paper was making the point that 12 years later, from the issue, from the time you and I are speaking of that event, I have the same darn thing happen again. I receive another sample from another place, that one in California, and I look at the material and I study it, and it is the same exact material that I'm speaking of between you and I of 1999. In their response. And there is a level of frustration that I do have, because it is not okay to allow this to transpire and pass for more than a decade, because the issue is just as strong now. In fact, it's stronger than it was 12 years ago. And to have no progress on the formal identification, you know, I can do my work, and I have the best I can, and we have some things we've learned. But these things have to be done at the proper level. This is not the responsibility of private citizens to be declaring the state of affairs with respect to environmental health of the planet. This is why we pay folks. I work for the feds, okay? Those people have a job to do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, you know, rather than kind of get bogged down here, though, and I appreciate all of what you've said. It's very valuable, and I'm not trying to make light of it. But because people are trying to gain knowledge here, could we move on to the next classification, if you don't mind, of the materials?
Sure. Unfortunately, they're related. Okay.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they're related. I can't get out of it, and that's the problem. We talked about a fiber material, and you could say, okay, there's a fiber, all right, and so what? If you want to dismiss it, I'm not saying you, but if that wants to be dismissed, fine, go ahead and dismiss it. But now you'd have to dig a little deeper. And now you have to start studying that filament. Now, the EPA should have done it, obviously, right? And we should have that disclosure, but we don't. So we are dependent upon whoever can provide that information to the best they can. I'm doing the best I can on that. If you study that filament in detail at a sufficient microscopic level, you will see, detect, and identify the presence of what I'll call at this point is biological components, okay? That's a generic phrase, and we can try to modify it the best we can later on. But if you don't know exactly what something is, you have to do the best you can. But within those filaments, and that's the key phrase here, within those filaments. Remember, I was already talking about something at the submicron level, less than asbestos. Within the filaments, you will detect and identify the presence of biological components. And these biological components lead to another entire discussion as to what is the nature of these biological components and why are they there and what impact would they have upon us. And I guess the simplest way that I would characterize it right now is that it appears to me that the filament structure is an encasing structure, and an encasing and a transport a vehicle or carrier or materials within it, specifically of interest, biological components within it, that lead us to a whole discussion that we will eventually get to on Mergellans, at least to some degree, tonight. So this is why I cannot disconnect these issues from one another, because there is a chain of events that take place that basically draws deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole, depending whether we want to go there or not.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you. It's lovely that you're as clear as you are with your explanations, because I think that the average person can understand you very well, in spite of the evident sort of scientific approach that you take, which in itself is also valuable. So in light of this, have you, I guess you're not a trained biologist, right?
This is correct. I have no medical degree expertise whatsoever. Claim none. The disclaimer will be over every paper I write just about. I have my educational background that people can look into if they want to, but I'm not a biologist.
All right. Do you have anyone on your team who is?
No, not at this point. Not at this point.
That's too bad. This is a very important sort of aspect of what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay. So from here, if I go off topic here and it's not sort of helpful, then please sort of direct me as to which direction you think we should go from here. But what I'd like to do is talk about, first of all, the metallic side, which has to do, I'm wondering whether there is any ormus or gold in the composition of the metallic side. And then I have questions also for the filaments and the biological side as well in that regard.
In terms of the constitution of the metals, the class of materials that I identify, to be specific, will be what's called group 2 of the periodic table, are the ones that catch my interest, calcium, magnesium, barium. These are what they call the earth alkalis, okay? No gold, no precious metals of any kind on my side. Remember, I am limited in terms of what I have access to and what I can do. I'll do the best I can, but this is the class of materials that has showed up in my test, and that is specifically, this is a particular class of materials in the periodic table that have basically a certain electrical charge quality to them, mixing with water and this type of thing. So that's a class of materials that I find, calcium, magnesium, barium. Barium is the one that is the most intriguing of those studies because of its ability to be ionized. It can be ionized more easily than the others, and so we can carry on with that discussion a little bit. But I don't have anything personally in, precious metals or anything like that.
Okay.
There are people, by the way, that repeatedly state the presence of aluminum, and, that's fine. It can be stated. All I can say, and sometimes that's attributed to me, the fact is on my side we won't find a single test at this point that actually demonstrates the presence of aluminum in unusual quantities. It does not mean it's not there at all. It just simply means it's not adequate or appropriate to attach that to me. And what's interesting about that to me, though, that if we bring up the aluminum question, that's in an entirely different portion of the periodic table, and the properties of that element are entirely different than the class that I'm speaking of. So it still remains unresolved, actually.
Okay, but there, regardless of the element, there has to be an effect on physical health of sort of having that in the atmosphere and breathed in, I imagine. And then how it affects, there's the side of the weather, what I would call the weather wars side of things, which is how it affects the weather and how it might be being used to affect the weather.
Sure.
Now, I understand this may not be your line of inquiry, but
it is. Actually, it is.
No, okay.
It is exactly. And both of those are very, very fair topics to cover. I'd say they're at the heart of it, okay, in terms of that part of the work. In terms of, let's take the environmental and the weather side a little bit more first, and then maybe a little bit on the health side. When I talk about ionizable metallic salt, here's another analogy I'll give you. And this is that of a fluorescent light tube. You know, when we have a neon light tube, when you look at that tube, there's no wire in there, right? There's no wire in that tube. And yet it produces light. And so how does that tube work? And the tube works by filling that tube with a gas, and it happens to be an electrically charged gas. This is actually what we're leading to. Okay. When you fill that tube with an electrically charged gas, you have the means to send energy from one end of that tube to the other and in the process create light. So without any wires, you are basically propagating electromagnetic energy through a gas.
Okay, very interesting. We're going to commercial again right now. We'll be right back and continue our fascinating discussion.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Most Americans know the significance of July 4th, 1776. However, few know the importance of September 17th, 1787, the day the Constitution was written and adopted by our founders. Unfortunately, over 200 years later, this sacred document is under attack, along with our beloved Republic. Throughout the span of history, brave men and women have rallied behind banners, which have served as symbols of liberty against the forces of tyranny. Today, we have the Constitution Pride flag to show our support for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, freedom, liberty, and justice for we the people of the United States. Now available at www.1787flags.com. Get your very own Constitution Pride flag today and receive a free pocket Constitution with your order. www.1787flags.com, the official website of the Constitution Pride flag. That's www.1787flags.com.
Feeling stressed, tired, lacking energy, or lacking libido? Now you can take control of your healthcare goals in the privacy of your own home with the use of reliable, high-quality health products from Ideal Health in New Zealand. Conveniently delivered to your door anywhere in the world. You'll find our friendly health team offer well-researched health information plus the highest quality health products. We want to ensure you not only get the best value products available, but also ensure you get the fastest therapeutic results. With over 2,600 pages of health information and natural products, all compiled by our friendly naturopathic team. To take advantage of very special rates, click on the banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
And don't forget our convenient delivery service, Ideal Health New Zealand, leaders in alternative health. That's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Ideal Health New Zealand button. Proudly brought to you by the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Why buy long-term storage and emergency preparedness dried and dehydrated foods? Well, freeze-dried and dehydrated foods can be stored just about any place and will be ready when you need it, like in the event of a disaster that disrupts transportation. Grocery stores would be empty within 3 days. Bulk food purchases really make your dollars count. Buying in bulk, your cost per pound drops significantly. And it has 7 to 30 years long-term shelf life. No refrigeration is required either, so if the power goes out, your food is still safe. And you know, studies have shown that dehydrated foods are actually substantially more nutritious than either frozen or canned foods. The loss is only 3 to 5% of the original nutritional value of the food, without added chemicals or additives, making this method of food preservation by far the best choice for natural, healthy eating. So log on to emergencypreparednessdirect.com.
You're listening to the future of talk. American Freedom Radio. This is American Freedom Radio.
Listen to Time for Hemp, hosted by Casper Leach. Afternoons, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Central. Only on American Freedom Radio.
You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? Then somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You hand in your ticket and you go watch the geek who immediately walks up to you.
Okay, this is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. We are talking to Clifford Carnicom about chemtrails. Clifford, just before the break, you were going into the weather aspect or connection that the metals have and so on. So do you want to continue on that vein?
Sure, Carrie. Thank you very much. Thanks for the song, too, by the way. Great music.
Great music.
Cool.
Okay, so we talked about a neon light tube, right, and the general physical principles involved there, which are really quite amazing when you think about it. The transmission of energy without any wire through a gas, through an electrically charged gas. Now I think the point to be made would be to expand your scope of consideration outside of the neon tube, and I'll go through two levels. The mid-level I'll go through is what they call the ionosphere. If you and I were talking on radio probably 20 years ago or more, there's a good chance that we would be on shortwave. And if we think about what that's about, shortwave radio, it was also fascinating for the times and still is. And this involves something called the ionosphere. And the ionosphere is a electrically charged layer in the upper atmosphere. Roughly, I think we're dealing roughly 60 and 100 miles up, something like that, and discovered right at the turn of the century, that century being 1900. And what happened here was a very important discovery, and that was that when somebody sent a radio wave from over in Europe over to the United States, they found that they could hear it, and they could hear it because it bounced off of this charged layer, this ionosphere. And what I was speaking of with the neon light tube is now being extended already to a global level and is doing the same exact thing in principle, in that that charged layer up there is allowing for the propagation of energy on a global scale from point A to point B using the general same physical principle, that of an electrically charged gas. Remember when I said these things ionize, that means they become electrically charged. And, you know, the atmosphere by itself is neutral. It's a very poor conductor. It's an excellent insulator by itself. But that ionosphere up there is a very good conductor. And the amazing thing is it takes only a little bit of change. When I looked it up, it's something like 3% of the mass of that layer is actually electrically charged. So a little bit of change in the ionization or electrical charge of that layer completely changes its physical properties and allows things to happen, okay, that would never happen otherwise. The aurora borealis, okay, is another example of electromagnetic propagation of energy through a charged gas. Now, what I'm leading to is an extension of this concept on even a larger scale. And the larger scale is the atmosphere in general, not confined to a layer, not in your neon light tube, not confined to a layer 60 to 100 miles thick or away from us, a very thin layer, by the way, but to the entire atmosphere of this planet. And remember what we said about a small change goes a long way. If you can introduce electrons or charged particles into this gas, you have the means and the prospect to completely change the manner in which that atmosphere is used. And again, this is conceptual at this point. It's based upon pure research and analytics. You know, I've done quite a few studies on conductivity of the atmosphere, so this stuff all has its ties in some type of direct observation or measurement that's been made based on real data, real information that we can all sort through if we wish to on the site. But I'm trying to lead us to the big picture here, and it is that if you extend this thinking and that if you do electrically change the nature of the gas, however small it might appear, the name of it is called a plasma, okay? Plasma is an electrically charged gas. If you do that, you allow the prospect, okay? Proof is something we can all discuss forever, but you allow the prospect in principle and concept of allowing for the propagation and direction of electromagnetic energy within that environment. And that environment now that we're speaking of encompasses the entire Earth.
Okay, well, that's really fascinating because in many ways you're really explaining the basics of how they are changing the weather on the planet, and then possibly also how they're using the scalar weapons within that scenario.
Correct, in the sense that, you know, in the end, a lot of what comes down to being of interest in this planet is energy. And if you can control and you can manipulate energy, it allows you to do things. And the weather is one part of this. You know, there are those people that have claimed that quote, global warming and such is the primary agenda between these whole operations. I'm sorry, on my side, it is not nearly sufficient. It is far more encompassing than that, and we can have that discussion. But on that level, weather is a dynamic system of which a major part of is the electromagnetic aspect. Why do thunderstorms occur? Okay, thunderstorms occur because of a discharge, you know, a voltage difference between up high and down here. And if you go changing the conductivity, and this is what happens when you introduce electrons, remember ions from ionizable materials, if you introduce, they call it the electron density, if you introduce electrons into that environment, you change the conductivity. If you change the conductivity, everything changes. And thunderstorms would be one small example of that. We can go much further than that if we'd like, and we can introduce at least the subject of HARP. And I think, you know, when I first encounter this stuff, it's sort of mind blowing to me, all right? Because I have to go through the gradual process of education, and you don't know where you're headed, but you are led to things that are so big, they're so grand, that it's hard for many of us to really get wrapped around what that really means. And I started reading the HARP patent. You know, I didn't start out that way, but I was led to the HARP, what's called the HARP patent. It's actually Bernard Eastman. But basically, that document is a blueprint for what is the HARP facility. And if you start reading this document in detail, which is what I did, I started to see this tremendous overlap. When I first started, it was, you know, quite a bit of it was quite unknown to me. There were terms and such I had to learn. But as you dig into this and you educate yourself, there was this tremendous overlap that occurred between the actual physical principles of this system, okay, called HARP, and exactly what I was literally actually measuring, okay? I was measuring these very salts. I was detecting these various specific salts that were mentioned in this patent. And you start reading this thing, and the scale of it is just incredible. And they are clearly talking basically about harnessing the energy of the weather system. And a fascinating epitome, I guess, of that document is in a paragraph where they're speaking of this thing called a heave weapon. And when I first saw that, of course, it meant nothing to me. And I say a heave weapon, and it's spelled H-E-A-V-E, Victor Echo, heave weapon. And I say, what the heck is that? And you read this, and what's happening here? And I see it. I see it in the data that I'm looking at. But they're talking about storing up energy in this ionized gas, namely the atmosphere. They're talking about exactly what we're speaking of. You have this ionized charged layer of the atmosphere, and they're talking about how can we store and how can we build up energy. And so you do this through the propagation of what's called ELF waves, extremely low frequency waves. They cover the whole globe. And they talk about basically propagating this energy and building it up and building it up. And it's designed to create a weapon, and it's a weapon the world doesn't even know of now in our world, okay, in world of disclosure that we have, but it certainly exists in the minds of the people that are behind this. And what this thing actually did was it builds up so much energy that it literally lifts up the magnetic field of the Earth. You know, if you can imagine this, okay, the magnetic field of the Earth, this is a three-dimensional force, basically a force environment. And the energy from this, they would accumulate, and they would lift up the magnetic field of the Earth and slam it back down on the Earth. And they called this a heave weapon, and they spoke of this as having the advantages of basically a nuclear bomb without having the bomb.
Incredible.
It is incredible.
Yeah, it's just stunning. Well, it appears that, you know, that your research has really sort of taken you down the rabbit hole. I can see where you might have started out at one end of the spectrum and ended up in a completely different place over the years. It must have really sort of altered your perception of reality even.
You go, you know, I go where I need to go, wherever that is. And I do not set boundaries on where that needs to go. And
okay.
Yes, it's been a process of, let's call it education and awareness.
Okay. Now, there's, you know, there's also beyond the atmosphere. In other words, there's the, you know, there's outer space. I don't know whether or not that enters into anything that you deal with, okay, because I really don't know. But I've heard that, for example, because we have an electromagnetic relationship with, for example, the sun, that then again affects this sort of soup of what you're talking about, right?
That's absolutely. You know, I've learned a long time ago to be very careful about dismissing anything. You know, I work hard to actually prove that something is relevant, but I also have tried very hard to never dismiss anything, never dismiss a consideration unless you can prove that it's not relevant, and that's really hard for me to do. And I don't have access, all right, to the cosmic data source, right? But I do the best I can, and it would be foolish also to deny the possibility of interactions just as you are describing. You know, it's been quite a little period of enlightenment for human beings in general about the role of the sun. You know, we act like we know things forever. I'll tell you, our knowledge of the cosmos is flipping on almost a daily basis in terms of what we're learning. And I need to be kind in my language, but we don't know hardly anything in terms of the cosmic sphere. And the interactions with the sun are just beginning to dawn upon us, basically how serious it's been within our ignorance. We don't even know what's been happening to us, that there are all kinds of interactions and potential perils as well that we're just beginning to discover. So all I can say at this point is I don't consider what you're saying irrelevant in the slightest, and I think it would be foolish to dismiss them. I just can't go further than, you know, we dig into our own subject on solar storms and that type of thing. And
okay. What about, you know, well, of course, yeah. There's so many aspects here, but
Carrie, if I can, I'll mean, you know, we talk, you're bringing up something and you're asking the question, are these related? And I'm trying to make the point that we certainly better consider them to be related until you can prove it's not. And I'll give you another example. And again, this is just more of an innuendo than anything. We don't know what it really means, but it certainly leads to an interesting discussion in its own right, and that is, if you look at the visitors, there's a period of my research where I documented and chronicled the visitors that came to my site, and I think it's whatever that paper is called, List of Visitors or something like that, right? And it lists all the agencies and such that showed an interest in my work. And that's an interesting list in itself. Well, the point here is that one of those visitors on that list is Ames Research Center. And if you look at who Ames Research Center is, A-M-E-S, Ames Research Center is the place that studies what's called exobiology. Okay. Life from far away, let's say. Okay. And let's just say that they were there. Okay. And yes, maybe it's just total coincidence and maybe it has no relation, but let's just say I do put patterns together, and there's another whole subject on, you know, life outside of this planet that, you know, I'll make a statement in another discussion another day, but my contention based on a radio broadcast directly from Ames. Ames Research Center had a broadcast on an astronomy show I was listening to. My conclusion based upon what I heard in that broadcast is it literally is this planet. Human beings have populated our universe with life forms because basically they have found that life forms are on our spaceships, can't be killed. And when they go out in space, they come back, they find they're still alive. Things are not as they appear to be in many, many ways.
Absolutely. Well, fascinating. There's also the side that has to do with volcanic action and earthquakes and that, for example, the situation in the Gulf, because I think that since the Gulf incident, for example, and then, of course, then we go to the Japan situation with putting the radiation into the atmosphere, you must have seen a shift since those two incidents. We'll have to be right back after this break.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers
in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Following a radiological or nuclear event, radioactive iodine may be released into the air and then be breathed into the lungs. Radioactive iodine may also contaminate the local food supply and get into the body through food or through drink. When radioactive materials get into the body through breathing, eating or drinking, the thyroid gland quickly absorbs the chemical. Radioactive iodine absorbed by the thyroid can then injure the gland. But you can protect yourself with use potassium iodide, which acts to block radioactive iodine from being taken into the thyroid gland and can help protect this gland from injury. To take advantage of very special rates, click on the banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And don't forget our convenient delivery service, Ideal Health New Zealand, leaders in alternative health. That's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Ideal Health New Zealand button. Proudly brought to you by the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Freedom Files. Freedom Files. Weekday, Monday through Friday from 3 to 5 p.m.
Central on American Freedom Radio.
Radio.
Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. Clifford, unfortunately, we only have less than 15 minutes left in the show. It's an amazing thing because we've covered some ground, but I know that there's an enormous amount of material and things we could be talking about for several hours here, and I'd love to revisit this in possibly even a live stream event, which I'd like to discuss with you. But at this moment, and I was just at the Ames Research website, which is apparently part of NASA. So I just wanted to make that distinction for people and certainly has everything to do with our space travel. So that is something to sort of tweak the mind there in terms of what you were saying. Very interesting parallels in what's going on and correlations with what you're talking about. So right before the break, I did ask you briefly if these two main incidents, which is the Gulf situation as well as what happened in Japan with the radiation and the major earthquake, putting all kinds of radiation into the atmosphere, can you address that and how that's altered or perhaps changed your work?
Fair answer is I have not studied these in detail. My work has taken a certain progression. There's been a natural progression, and actually one of the things that's going on, in fact, for the first time last week, I saw a list of all the articles I've written. I've never seen them all before because they've just sort of built up on the site, and a lot of them are hidden. And so what we're going to be doing very soon is sort of re-pulling all these papers together and getting them out in a more collective sense. Because if you follow the work that I've done, there's a certain natural progression that's taken place, and a part of that is geophysical study. And when I say a period of study, it usually involves several years. And we're talking about 13 years or so, I suppose, total. And, you know, the first couple years were like strictly documentation, photographs, that type of thing. And then I started getting to environmental sampling. And so each of these things last for a couple years. There is a period there where some pretty intense geophysical study and work was done. I'd say for about at least a 2 or 3 year period. And the whole global warming thing got in, the HARP issue and ELF and this type of thing. And that work was done several years ago, and I basically made my mark the best I could during that time period. And over the past, now it's getting closer to 4 years or so, I suppose, my work has been heavily dominant in the biological aspect, which we'll probably have a few minutes to talk to. But not ignoring your question entirely, but I wanted to let you know that what I did several years ago was engaged myself fairly deeply on a geophysical aspect, and it's where it started to bring up these things of the heave weapon. And I started to look at things from sort of an energy standpoint on a global scale. And I had questions that were raised in my mind about, you know, is it possible? Is it possible for human beings, just like we talked about at the beginning, is it possible for us to modify the entire atmosphere of the planet? And the answer was yes. And the question that came up in my mind about geophysics was, is it possible that we can sort of actually affect the what you'd call the energy quotient of the Earth? Could it be that we could actually affect geophysical processes? And I engaged myself pretty deeply in this problem, and I got involved with some very interesting questions and prompts. These things get so deep that they're not in my mind every day. They're a period of real deep engagement, and then I will write on them. But there were issues that came up, started with a heave weapon. Then you get into areas of what's called tomography, where you're sending that energy, especially, ELF waves have the property of being very broad and the ability to deeply penetrate, okay? And they're also part of our own biology, by the way. But the idea of tomography came up, where you're the idea of mapping underground. Right, where you're determining internal structure. These things are real. These things are not just some pipe dream. We have such systems in place. You have all kinds of geophysical systems in place to try and detect the structure beneath the Earth. And it's not always the structure that was after. That was part of the whole claimed, quote, war on terrorism, unquote. But basically to be able to determine underground structure of this Earth. And it is, again, in concept to me, but I expect to have systems in place that are quite active in the direction, accumulation, and propagation of energy in a subterranean fashion, okay? And I know that's fairly vague and general, but that's how I start out, and then okay. We dig into the detail as we need to. But what does that mean? That means very likely potential implications with tectonic plates, mapping underground, instigating geophysical events. These things become very real considerations. And I'll say that the climax of that work actually got it sounds a little bit esoteric and sort of make-believe, I suppose, to some people. But the question actually came up is, in my mind, is whether or not it was possible that the rotational rate of the Earth could be affected by this. And this was really wild when I started it. But the fact is, if you look at that work, it actually did become conceivable to me. And this was done through, you know, physics and mathematics. It actually became quite feasible to me that we could literally affect the Earth on a geophysical total sense, okay, of energy is what I'm speaking. When you're talking about the rotational rate of the Earth, you're talking about basically the whole mass of the Earth and whether or not there's a differential that could be applied to that. And the answer that came up, it was tantalizing, okay? I can't prove these things when you're talking about these global scale problems. But the work showed that, you know, this was not out of bounds at all. And the way, the reason this whole study came up in part had to do with what I would call anomalous data in the what you call the recording of time. Time is a very interesting thing in itself. We have an artificial scale that we use, and you also have the the natural cycle of the Earth. And there was an anomalous differential between these two systems that caught my attention in the data. And there's also a tie, you know, you were talking about magnetic field also earlier. There was also tie-in with that work with anomalous events in the magnetic field of the Earth, very strong in the 1940s during the atomic testing. It's quite fascinating, these things we're talking about. So,
wow.
You know, my broad answer to your question is that I anticipate such systems to be actively engaged in attempting to modify, control, and direct this energy. I have not been involved in the geophysical explorations and projects in the way I was during those periods of several years. But I will say, if people want to read those papers, I think that you will find them directly applicable to the situations that you're talking about in principle.
Wow, yeah, definitely. Fascinating where this all goes. I can see where this could get into what's going on at CERN even.
That's right.
Okay, very interesting. Well, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time here. Is there any last sort of parting remarks in the next 5 minutes? I would have loved to allow people to ask you questions. We do have a chat room that goes on during the show, and people do like to ask questions, but it simply hasn't been a time for us to do that here. Do you have some last closing remarks in regard? Again, it sounds as though the radiation, the situation with Japan and the situation in the Gulf is something that either you must be beginning to investigate, but you haven't really gotten into that all that much, or we haven't had time to talk about it.
Unfortunately, what I see in a general sense is that this planet is in peril, okay? And I'm not trying to be alarmist, but this planet is an ecosystem, and it's very resilient, and it can sustain a great deal of damage and infringement. But you know, it has a capacity, and that capacity is not infinite. And the collective effect and accumulation of the impact and damage from human beings and their needs and desires to attempt to control their world and their environment are taking their toll, and they're taking their toll in a very serious way. The Earth cannot stand up to infinite damage. And I don't know what that breaking point is, but I have no doubt in my mind that our planet has been altered. There is degradation in the quality of, you know, people. One of my pet peeves is that, you know, I see human beings as looking at this world only from a human perspective. And in general, I do not see them imbibing the totality of life into their level of awareness. And it is the totality of existence of this planet that is in peril. Human beings do not have the call to be pulling these shots in a cosmic sense about what we think is right and wrong for our own particular needs at this, you know, this stage of our existence. And I just think we need to open our eyes and be sensitive and aware of our place, and our place is not guaranteed.
Right. Well, I appreciate what you're saying here. Obviously, you know, the ecosystem, as you're saying, plants and animals, the environment, it is all affected by everything we're talking about here, as well as human beings and their biology. It is a very interesting dynamic. Do you want to give your website out? I'm very sorry we're at the end of the show here. And again, I'd like to extend the offer to do an extended, uninterrupted dialogue on live stream in the near future, even with yourself and more members of your team if you'd like, or just yourself on these topics. But could you give your website out?
Sure, Carrie. Thank you very much. And we can work on the invitation. I appreciate it. And thank you very much for that. The websites would be twofold at this point. We're working on gradually going to integrate these within a single site. The research site, the one that developed as what I would call a personal personal responsibility. It is strictly under my name, carnicom.com, spelled C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M. Carnicom.com is a research site, and carnicominstitute.org, same spelling, carnicominstitute.org is the nonprofit, which is eventually to be the portal for all the information.
Why buy long-term storage and emergency preparedness dried and dehydrated foods? Well, freeze-dried and dehydrated foods can be stored just about any place and will be ready when you need it, like in the event of a disaster that disrupts transportation. Grocery stores would be empty within 3 days. Bulk food purchases really make your dollars count. Buying in bulk, your cost per pound drops significantly. And it has 7 to 30 years long-term shelf life. No refrigeration is required either, so if the power goes out, your food is still safe. And you know, studies have shown that dehydrated foods are actually substantially more nutritious than either frozen or canned foods. The loss is only 3 to 5% of the original nutritional value of the food, without added chemicals or additives, making this method of food preservation by far the best choice for natural, healthy eating. So log on to emergencypreparednessdirect.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserves the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know that we are tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.